respected Venerable Gisela, and also the Sangha members, and all Dharma brothers and sisters. First of all, I would like to take this opportunity to extend my very warm greetings and best wishes to all of you. And also, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you very much for inviting me here and giving such a warm and traditional welcome upon my arrival here in this center. And I have visited this center a number of times, and I still have very fond memories of my past visit. And so this time, once again, to be here, it is a great joy for me to visit the center and to spend some time with the members. And it is very encouraging to see that so many people are now interested in learning Dharma and also practicing it. And there's no doubt that Buddha Dharma is actually the source of all the happiness and the benefits. The world where we live has many different people, many different ideas, many different culture. But one thing that is common to all is that everyone wishes to be free from suffering and wishes to accomplish the happiness. And so for the sake of the accomplishing the happiness, every one of us, every society is running one after another to find the happiness. And for the sake of happiness, that we made progress, developments, and especially during the last century, there is so much progress has been made in the field of science and technology. And through these brought us a lot of benefits. But at the same time, it's very clear that actual happiness could not find through these outer technology developments. And to find the real happiness, one have to change the mind, and one have to be free the mind from the defilements. And so for that we need the spiritual assistance through which then one can change the mind. And there are many different religions, and I myself personally believe that every major religions of the world, each one of them has its own beauty and has its own way to help the mankind. And so the variety of the different traditions, different spiritual tradition, is necessary, just as like we need the different medicines to cure the different diseases. But as a Buddhist point of view, that our consciousness, our mind, has no beginning as such. It's one of the wonders, is the consciousness has no beginning. It's been just like the seed. How can we find the first seed? Similarly, there's no such time as the beginning of the individual consciousness. So that we've been here in the samsara from the beginningless time, we refer it as like beginningless. And so that means that there's no beginning. As it's from beginningless time that we are here caught up in the samsara. And as long as in the samsara there is no freedom, there is no happiness, one have to go through enormous kind of sufferings. So therefore, we will have to make efforts, especially when we have all the good opportunities, such as being born as human being, and when we have all the prerequisite that it should not be waste, and we must try to achieve a concrete result when we have this golden opportunity. And and there are many different kinds of spiritual paths. So whichever one follows, that wisdom is very important, because we all are different abilities, different mentalities, different defilements, and so therefore everyone could not be the same. So generally speaking, that we think that there are three kinds of spiritual path. And so the very basic one, that the life is impermanent. Buddha said that all compound things are impermanent, which means that anything that is rising out of cause and condition is impermanent. And so end of the birth has to be, and anyone who is born has to die. And when we die, our physical body will be disposed in one way or another. But the mental consciousness could not be just disappear, because the mind and body are very different. Body is visible and can see through the eyes, can touch, and can describe. But the mind is something very different. It's invisible, cannot see, and cannot touch, so it could not just disappear. So the consciousness, mental consciousness, has to continue. And it determines, while we are living, those who are committed negative deeds, then it will cause to fall down in the lower realms. And the virtuous deeds will cause us to continuously born in the higher realms. So those who realize that if one falls in the lower realms, there is an unimaginable amount of sufferings. So to prevent to fall down in the lower realms and continuously to be born in the higher realms, for the sake of that one practices Dharma, and this is called the small person's path. And to be able to successfully to carry on that, one needs to abstain from the non-virtuous deeds, and one have to practice the virtuous deeds by keeping all the good moral conducts. And and it is called small person's path, because although it is seeking a spiritual path, but it is still within the circle of samsara. Only the difference is lower realm and higher realm, seeking the higher realm. So therefore it is called the small person's path. And to be able to do this successfully depends on the wisdom. Without the wisdom, then one could not keep the good moral conduct. So even this very inferior and basic part also depends on the wisdom. Then there's the mediocre person's path, which means that who realize not only in the lower realms, even the higher realms also. Of course, there's a different degrees of suffering. The lower realms have a very heavy sufferings, and higher realms have a less suffering. But actually, it is all nature of suffering. Even the feelings that we consider as like joy and pleasure are also, in a way, it is in another form of suffering. So the entire samsara, from the highest heavenly realm to the lowest hell realm, is all nature of suffering. So that he will realize the entire samsara, there's not a single spot that is worthy of attachment and wishes to renounce totally and to seek liberation. To accomplish that, one needs to cut the root of the samsara. The root of the samsara is self-clinging. The root of samsara is self-clinging in a sense, instead of seeing the true nature of the mind, that without any logical reasons that one clings as a self. But if we try to find out the self, that you cannot find anywhere. But due to a very strong habitual tendency that builds up, and so that we all have the natural habit of clinging as a self. And so when you cling as a self, then automatically appears the others, the self and others is like depending on each other. So when you have the self and others, then so the basically the fault is the ignorance of not knowing the reality, and due to ignorance that we cling as a self, then appears the others. So when you have the self and others, then there's the desire or the attachment to one's own sight, and anger to the others. And then from there arises the other defilements like pride, stinginess, and jealousy, etc. And then from these defilements that we take actions. When you take actions, then we create karma, and that will cause us to tie it in the samsara. So to renounce totally from the samsara, you need to cut the root of the samsara, which is the self-clinging. So to do that, you need the wisdom. Wisdom that realizes the selflessness. And so therefore, to accomplish this goal also, the wisdom is absolutely essential. Without such wisdom, one could not liberate oneself from the samsara and to attain the nirvana. And then, so this is called the mediocre person's path, because it is higher than the one who is seeking the higher rebirth, but it is not the ultimate goal, so it is the mediocre person's path. Then we have the great person's path, the person who realizes now not only the lower realms, the entire samsara is suffering, and that also not oneself alone, but every sentient being is. And since we believe in the rebirth, from the beginning last time until now, that we are caught up in the samsara, and we keep changing. It's called the circle of life, the wheel of life. Just like the wheel turns one round, and then again it turns. So likewise, the life goes on. And since we keep changing, the place and parents and relatives and so on, so there's not it keeps rotating. So therefore, there's not a single sentient being that who did not become our very kind mother, father, and relatives, and friends, and so on. Every time we have taken the birth, they have given us so much love and benefit, and saved from many harms, and they've been all very, very kind and very kindness. But due to the change of life, that we could not recognize each other, and we see some as our relatives, some as friends, some as enemies, some as indifferent. But in reality, that every one of them are very, very kind mothers and friends and so on. And so, therefore, it is our duty, it is our responsibility to pay back their kindness and their love and the benefit they have given to us. So to ignore them and just to seek liberation for oneself alone is not right. Even in worldly level, even in just this life also, that if your family members and friends to whom you have so much love are in the midst of great suffering, and then oneself alone in a safe and in a happy place, if you are a good-hearted person, you wouldn't feel good, you wouldn't feel happy. And it's morally, it's not right. And so therefore, one who realizes this, so therefore, instead of seeking for oneself alone, the liberation, that one have to think of all the others, the limitless sentient beings, to relieve from the suffering and to place them to the path of happiness. So you generate loving kindness and the compassion to all sentient beings without any kind of exception, without any difference. And so when you have the genuine loving kindness and the compassion, then one could not remain in idle. And so we must do something. But at the moment, we can't do because we are ordinary person and we have no freedom. Wherever the winds of karma blows, one have to be there. And even though we have the feeling, but we can't help them. And so only way to effectively to help the sentient being is to seek full enlightenment. Because when you are enlightened, when you attain the ultimate enlightenment, and then you can help rescue sentient beings. Even in a single moment, the countless sentient beings will be able to save. And so to attain the enlightenment, that you need to enter the bodhisattva path. And the bodhisattvas, the main practice is called the six perfections, such as like the perfection of generosity, the perfection of moral conduct, the perfection of patience, and endeavor, and meditation, and wisdom. And so the five of them are method side, and wisdom is the one side. And without wisdom, the five of them are just like a blind. Wisdom is like the person with the eyes. The blind person could not walk. Similarly, these other practices could not reach without the wisdom. But the blind person, the person with the eyes, can lead, and then to get into the places wherever one wishes to go. And so, likewise, wisdom is absolutely necessary. And in fact, without wisdom, the generosity could not be the perfection. To have the name of perfection, it has to be a generosity combined with the wisdom. But the methods are also very important. Methods are like the feet. And wisdom is like the eyes. To walk on the road and to get to your destination, you need the eyes to see the path and the feet to walk on. The blind person with the feet could not walk. The person with the eyes but without feet also could not walk. But with the person with the feet, and also with the eyes, then can see the path and walk on and get to your destination. And so therefore, Bodhisattva path, or the great person's path, is also, the wisdom is absolutely essential. So the whichever path that one wishes to follow, the Shavakas, the worldly path, higher rebirth, and personal liberation, or even ultimate enlightenment, wisdom is very important. And then we have the Vajrayana path, the Vajrayana, the Mantrayana path. And that, the beginning, the motivation of enlightenment mind, and ultimate realization of the truth, and final accomplishment of the full enlightenment is a concern. There's no difference between the Paramitayana or the general Mahayana path and Mantrayana path. But the difference is there are four ways that Mantrayana is more advanced, more greater, and then the general Mahayana. Because in general Mahayana, that we meditate through the just meditation, that you gradually improves and makes closer to the ultimate reality. So as a being in an ordinary person, then there's no way to have the actual reality, the glimpse of the reality. One can have the general ideas of the reality, but one could not experience the direct experience of the direct glimpse of the reality could not be experienced. But in Vajrayana, that during the empowerment, the descending the transcendental wisdom, or during the main empowerment by using the different methods of emphasizing on the channels and elements and so on, that even as ordinary person can have the experience, the glimpse of the ultimate truth, ultimate reality. And so therefore one can say that it is as the Vajrayana has the direct method to experience the ultimate reality, which is the first specialty. And secondly, that it has more methods many different methods by using the body, the elements and the channels and breathing and also the visualizations and the recitations, etc., through which can have a very strong impact on the realization. And then also, so this is the second specialty. And the third specialty is that it is meant for the intelligent beings. Generally speaking, the Buddha's teachings is very vast and profound, like an ocean. And so for ordinary persons, that it is difficult to comprehend fully. And especially the tantric teachings are bound with the Vajra words, so it's difficult to ordinary person to comprehend. And so therefore, wisdom is of course very, very important to have. And so this is the third specialty. And then fourth specialty is that it is without going through the hardships, whereas in Paramitayana, one have to go through a very difficult practices by keeping one's own part of the body, etc. But in Tantrayana, that one need not go through such hardships, and one can go from bliss to bliss. So that is the fourth specialty. And so, whichever level of the spiritual path that one wishes to follow, wisdom is something that is absolutely essential. And such wisdom, the seed, we all have the seed of the wisdom, in the sense that we all have the Buddha nature, the true nature of our mind is never stained with the obscurations. And the true nature of our mind is naturally pure from the beginningless time. But to awaken this seed, to awaken this wisdom seed, depends on the necessary conditions. For example, every seed has the potency to grow as a crops. But if you keep the seed in a dry box, it will never grow. To grow the seed, you need to create the necessary conditions, like placing it on the fertile ground with the right moisture, with the right temperature, etc. So similarly, to awaken our seed, that we need to seek the blessings of the Manjushri, who is the manifestation of all the Buddha's wisdom. And so for this, the practice of the Manjushri is very important. And especially to recite the Manjushri Namasangita Tantra, because this, I believe, is also the actually Tantra for all the Tantric teachings. So today I'm going to give the reading transmission of this Tantra. And I myself received this transmission from many gurus, and especially I received this transmission from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And so this is very, very important, because it is the root of all the other Tantras as well. So now I'm going to read this, and to read this, that it is important when you receive the reading transmissions, that it is important to have the right motivation. And that is for the sake of all sentient beings, one must attain the full enlightenment. And in order to attain enlightenment, that you are receiving this reading transmission. And after receiving this, that one will diligently follow the path. With such a right motivation, also with the right conduct, just as like the patient receiving advice from the doctor. So now I will do the reading transmission.
Jinan Of the Manjushri Namasangit. As it is very good that now there's many centers coming up, and so everyone should emphasize in your teachings that you receive from your teachers, that you try to put in your everyday life as much as possible in practice. Generally speaking, all the teachings of the Buddha are based on the compassion. Especially the Mahayana teachings, the root lies in the compassion. So in the sutras and the commentaries all emphasize how important the compassion in the beginning, in the meantime, and also at the end. And whatever little compassion that we as an ordinary person can have is very precious, and we try to generate and try to increase, and more important, that try to put the compassion in action. The idea is that to generate compassion to all, the universal compassion to every sentient beings, but at this level, those who are in surrounding you, like your neighbors and those who are surrounding you, animals, human beings, especially those who are sick and destitute and who are poor, that we try to help them as a Dhamma center, that we try to help them as much as possible. And also the general social service, and especially to look after to make awareness among the old people the importance of the environment. And so that then the Dharma Center will become active. You see, compassion in action. This is what His Holiness the Dalai Lama also emphasized. And he even told us that when I go to the different Dharma Centers, that I must advise how important to put the compassion in action, and by doing social service and to make aware the importance of the environment. And so the Dharma Centers must take the initiative, and Dharma Centers must set an example how to do the social service and also to look after the environment. So once again, I would like to thank you very much for everyone for inviting me here and giving me such a warm reception, and that I wish all of you in your personal practice as well as in the community work will meet with a complete success. And may the blessings of the people.